Good evening and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden, and tonight, my co-host tonight is San Rafael attorney Rob Wyman. Rob is a sought-after speaker who routinely addresses attorneys, physicians, unions, and consumer groups about workers' compensation law in California. Rob?
Good evening, Jeff. It's always good to be with you. And, you know, I'm typically here as your workers' compensation guy. But frequently, the claims I handle also involve personal injury law. And that's why we've asked Chris to come in here tonight. We'll introduce him in just a moment, because it can get kind of complicated when the two systems overlap. And so that's going to be the topic of tonight's show, is the interplay between workers' compensation and personal injury law. And they've evolved completely differently. They have different sets of rules. And, you know, hopefully tonight we'll be able to, in the time we have, explain how each system works and how they work together. And joining us tonight, after returning for apparently a good 15 years or so, is Chris Viadra. I've known, we just, you know, had a trip down memory lane to see how long we've known each other, and it's been for a long time. And Chris is a managing partner and founder of Viadra Law. They litigate catastrophic personal injury cases and workers' compensation cases. And Chris has served on the board of directors, continues to serve on the board of directors of the California Applicants Attorneys Association. He has served on the board of the San Francisco Trial Lawyers Association, Consumer Attorneys of California, and presently serves on the Alameda Contra Costa County Trial Lawyers Association. Did I get all that right, Chris?
Just about. Just I'm a member of CAOC, board member, but thank you very much. It's great to be here.
You keep yourself busy with a lot of organizations.
I try to.
Okay. And Chris, I know it's been a long time, but welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
I really appreciate you having me here.
And as always, welcome to all of you. We're eager to hear from our listeners and to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're not in the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. We're talking about workers' compensation law and about personal injury law, and really where those two things come together. And you would find, and hopefully you're not in that position, but for those of you who may be or may have been, you find that your personal injury case may evolve quite differently than a workers' compensation case, even when they arrive from the same event. Neither is more important than the other, and the paradigms can appear quite different. But do bear in mind, our guests can't provide you specific legal advice, or for that matter, medical advice. We're not going to have all the facts related to your case, but we're happy to pass along the legal principles, guide you in your decision-making, even when the guidance isn't necessarily the positions of their respective clients or their employers. My guests are here to educate and inform.
So, you know, my practice is workers' compensation, and so people come to see me when they're injured at work, and generally, you know, most of the cases I handle, it's strictly a workers' compensation claim. They slip and fall at work, they lift up something heavy, they hurt themselves, and I guide them through the workers' compensation system. But during the initial interview, one of the most important things I do is ask them how they got hurt, because frequently their injury is caused by a third party. And one example that we have is the classic is a car accident. Someone is out running a work errand, and they get hurt. But they're working, so they have a workers' compensation claim. And it's my duty as a workers' compensation attorney to spot that issue and see if there isn't a third-party lawsuit involved. And at that point, I immediately put them in touch with someone like Chris, who handles personal injury law to see if they should also be filing a lawsuit against the person that caused their injury. Workers' compensation law is a very flexible system, and in some ways a simple system to navigate if you have an attorney. Personal injury law is a little trickier. There's rules, there's timelines, and boy, they're strict about them. So, you know, it's important to get, for me to get someone to a good personal injury attorney, to make sure they don't miss any of those timelines, to make sure that their rights are protected. So, Chris, one of the first questions I have for you is, what are the time limits for bringing a lawsuit against a third party?
Well, as is the case for many things in the law, it depends. And it depends on what, depends in part on what the nature of the claim is. It depends on who's being sued, who the defendant is. That's what we call the person that's being, or the entity that's being sued. And so there might be very short timelines if you're dealing with a government claim, meaning if it is a county or an employee of a county or a city or the state that was responsible for causing the injury, then a claim, as opposed to a lawsuit, needs to first be filed with the proper entity, and that generally has to be done within 6 months. And then there's another timeline after that, if the claim is rejected, that the lawsuit has to be filed, generally speaking, 1 year. So that's for a government claim. Did you want to say something? Or?
Yeah, I was just going to say the paperwork, as I recall, is fairly straightforward for filing that claim against the government entity. So a client of mine is crossing the street and they get hit by a city bus. They've got to fill out some paperwork with the city within 6 months, and that's a hard and fast rule, isn't it?
It is. There is a way that if you don't file it within 6 months, that you can petition for relief to file a late claim, but I would never want to count on that, and I would push back ever so slightly on the form that you're talking about. It is a very simple form, but you have to have the claim asserted appropriately or you can lose some rights. So that's one reason to not necessarily go it alone in submitting a claim.
So in a government case, I might want to get my client over to you and plenty of time to make sure you can help them with that six-month rule and getting that paperwork filled out.
Yeah, and you don't want to, you know, there's investigation that a lawyer is going to have to do and questions to be asked and things to be looked into. And so, you don't want to wait until, 5 months and 2 weeks. It's really best to talk to somebody early on. But coming back to your original question about timing, that's just a government claim that we've been addressing. If it's a regular company, your individual driver, et cetera, generally, and you're going to hear me say generally a lot tonight because there's always some variation to everything we're talking about, but generally, it's a 2-year statute of limitations. And when I say statute of limitations, that's the fancy term for the time limit in which to bring a lawsuit. And when you're doing that against an individual, you don't do that that claim first. You would file a lawsuit. You can try to get compensated without a lawsuit, but if you can't, then the lawsuit has to be done within 2 years. And there's nuance to it, and there's also variations when, you know, you're talking about other claims like medical malpractice, and which has a different timeline altogether, and then sometimes you might have a product liability claim that's 2 years unless you're dealing with something out of state, and that timeline can be different. So again, we're just focusing on California, and those are the general timelines. But there's nuance, and so it's helpful to speak to somebody who knows the details and can flesh out what is exactly applicable to your situation.
But let's take a step back. from a layperson's perspective, when you've been injured at work or the like, when would you want to file under personal injury as opposed to workers' comp? Or maybe when do you want to do both?
I think you always want to do both. And
If you can. And we should talk about that.
And sometimes financially it doesn't make sense to do both. Just do one or the other. I certainly want my clients, if I think there's even the possibility of a third-party claim, to talk to someone like Chris early on. Now, he may not want to step in right away. There may be reasons why he wouldn't want to take that case, or at least see how the workers' compensation claim plays out. But I think it's important for someone to look at the case for the reasons Chris just said. There are different timelines, and you don't want to miss them.
And I would circle back on where you started, Rob, and your question there, Jeff, and get back to maybe the fundamentals a little bit. And I would say that, you know, the way it works is if you're hurt on the job, you generally, unless there, again, you heard me use the word generally, but you generally just have a workers' compensation case, and that's your only remedy. And you can't sue, just so you all know, you can't sue your employer for a workplace injury. The law says that the workers' compensation system is the exclusive remedy of an injured worker for a workplace injury. But this concept of third party that you brought up earlier is that protection of the workers' comp system doesn't apply to somebody other than the employer. So if it's that driver you were talking about, they don't get protected by workers' comp, and they can have a lawsuit brought against them. And we've used that simple...
But just fundamentally, why would you gravitate towards one or the other? Is there a difference in what you can get out of it by going workers' comp as opposed to a lawsuit and vice versa?
The benefits can be different. One advantage, and Chris, I'm going to throw this over to you in a minute, but one advantage of workers' compensation is that in theory, I'll use your word generally,
yeah,
we're able to get benefits right away. So if someone's injured, we can get them temporary disability benefits, which is not a complete wage replacement, but it's some money coming in. We can get the medical treatment paid for by the workers' compensation carrier fairly quickly. Now, sometimes claims are denied, and we have to work for many months to get them accepted. But still, in theory, I'd say for most of my clients, I can get some benefits going right away. But benefits don't just flow in your system.
No, not at all, because you have to... you have to show different things. Fundamentally, you have to show that the other side caused your harm, and that's, you know, a whole detailed area in terms of fault and showing that what injuries you have were actually caused in the incident, et cetera. But getting back to your question, Jeff, that what is available in a personal injury case in terms of compensation is different than those disability and medical benefits that you get in the comp system. And those are, and you know, people may have heard of some of these terms, but you can get pain and suffering in a personal injury case. And that is a broad term, and it really encompasses a lot of things. It's the pain you're enduring from the injury. It really also focuses on, you know, if the injury is significant enough and you have permanent limitations, you know, how is your life different before and after? You used to, you know, have all these hobbies and now you can't do them anymore because of the injury. There is compensation that can be had for that.
Yeah, you can actually add that to the claim as a loss and to the injured person and have that be part of your claim against that third party. They can't play tennis anymore. They can't go bowling anymore. They can't run with their kids in the park.
That's right.
And we don't get that in workers' compensation. We have permanent disability, but it's very limited.
Yeah.
So we don't get pain. And another benefit, you know, I mentioned earlier, I can get someone temporary disability, which is 2/3 of the worker's gross wage, but it maxes out at $1,600 a week. So if someone's a high wage earner, they're losing out a lot, but that's the most I can get for them. But you can do better than that in your system.
That's right. We can claim lost wages, and those that claim can be measured really at a couple different times. Maybe somebody fracture. You know, they're a laborer, for example, and they fracture their ankle, and they can't work for 6 months. Well, that is a closed period where they're not working at all. And if the other, party that caused the injury, if you can show that they were at fault, then that's part of the wage loss claim, that period, what they would have earned. It's the difference between what was, you know, happening, they were working, and what is happening now, they're not working. Now, sometimes the injuries are severe enough that somebody can't go back to doing their job at all. Maybe they can do something else, but they can't go back to the type of work that they were doing. And in those cases, if some new job that they have to perform going forward in their life is at a lower rate than what they were earning, then you can also claim that differential as part of the wage loss going into the future.
And that's another benefit that we don't have.
That's
so
right.
I'm getting my person maybe temporary disability for a year or two. You can go get them the difference between that temporary disability and what their actual salary would have been. And then you can look at lost wages on into the future.
For the rest of their life, if there is a difference between what they were earning and what they can reasonably and fairly earn afterwards.
Which system seems better set up to take care of their medical needs?
Well, I mean, we do have the advantage of being able to get someone to a doctor entirely at the expense of the workers' compensation carrier. So they're getting free treatment. Now, as we've discussed on this program in the past, ours is far from a perfect system. A lot of treatment is delayed, a lot of treatment is denied, but in theory, they can start seeing a doctor immediately, 100% paid for by the workers' compensation carrier. That's not the case in your world, as I understand it.
But wouldn't the flip side of that be that if somebody feels that they're in for a payday because of the injury they suffered, if their meds are being paid for by the workers' comp, are they able to still claim those typical damages?
Yeah, and this is going to start to get a little nuanced and complicated. There is generally, you know, to keep in mind, there's no double recovery. Somebody who's hurt can't get paid twice and recover their medical expenses for the same injury. Yet they can be claimed in the personal injury case, but the law allows for some protection in that regard. The workers' comp carrier that has paid the injured worker or paid medical expenses on their behalf can also seek to get reimbursed in the personal injury case. So even though the injured worker is claiming those, some of those may, depending on the facts of the case, go back to the workers' compensation carrier. But your question about which is better, you know, the way that the workers' comp system originated, you know, way back in the early 1900s, so we're talking a long time ago, was to address in part that very fact. You had before it existed, people were suing their employers for workplace injuries, and they were waiting forever to get any medical treatment or any disability benefits. And so the comp system, the workers' comp system, is there as hopefully a more immediate safety net type of system. And personal injury, where it is available, has a better chance at compensating somebody for their actual and full damages.
If I can sort of simplify this.
I'm sorry.
That was an excellent the way I've always looked at it is that our benefits are kind of lousy. We don't get people a lot of money. They don't always get all the medical care they need, but at least we get it to them quickly. And in your system, quite often, the total payout can be a lot better, but you've got to wait for it.
Yeah.
But in the personal injury system, you have to show that the other person was at fault. And as I understand it, in workers' compensation, you're injured on the job. You're going to start getting benefits even if it was you that messed up.
I could cause my own accident. I could do something dope. I could even do something that my employers told me not to do. Rob, don't go change that light bulb. We've got someone to do it for you. And I decide, you know, I can't see. I'm just going to change a darn light bulb myself. And I hurt myself. Entirely my fault. I still get workers' compensation benefits for the most part. It's very hard to deny workers' compensation benefits to an injured worker.
And that, you know, that may sound a little odd out there, but it was going back to the 1900s. It's this trade-off that the best outcome at that time was viewed, okay, we're not going to look, Rob, at whether you made a mistake in changing that light bulb. And we're not going to look at your employer either if they were at fault. So if the employer's at fault, you're at fault, a co-employee's at fault, we're just going to create this no-fault system in workers' comp to try to get you benefits. And so sometimes maybe it doesn't feel right one way or the other, but it's helping somebody hopefully get back to work, back on their feet, and back to being a productive member of society.
If the guy who forgot to tell anybody that he dropped some oil or grease on the ladder that you were walking up, if that's a third party, you might have a PI claim. And if it's an employee, you're probably stuck in workers' comp.
Oh, I had that exact claim. A mechanic who, I mean, this is like something out of a bad TV show. You know, he was 4 months from retirement. He was trying to get a little more time in to get a slightly better pension. One of his coworkers spilled clean oil on the floor, so he couldn't see it. He slipped in it and had a terrible hip fracture. And he just felt like the employer should be punished somehow. But it's a no-fault system. He could have spilled the oil himself, slipped in it, and he'd still get the same benefits.
Right. So, and then back to Rob's comment, if that same scenario was not the co-employee but a custodian that worked for some other company, then that's your third party. And probably in the course of our discussion, we'll come up with some more examples, but there's really a million of them, how we all interact in the course of our jobs with people of other companies. And that whenever you're interacting with somebody else, if it's on a construction site, those are very often multi-employer sites. You have a general contractor and all these different subs working all along alongside each other. And that kind of interaction can often lead to injuries. And if it's a third party, again, you have both the workers' comp as well as the personal injury case.
And I would think anytime somebody's delivering something, you're delivering it to somebody, they may not be from the same company, or they may be there may be people that are trucking or whatever it is, and again, a whole different source than the person you're working for.
And it's important for me to ask to ask specific questions about that. How did you get hurt? Why I tripped over some torn carpeting? Well, who's responsible for that carpeting? Is it the employer? Is it their job to replace and maintain the carpeting? Or maybe it's the owner of the building. In my case, it's the owner of the building. So if someone trips in my office, if one of my employees trips in my office on some frayed carpeting, they're going to have a workers' compensation claim, but then they might also have a claim against the building owners for not maintaining the carpeting, or someone slips in some water. I said, well, who spilled the water? Was it your coworker, or maybe a plumber that was in fixing something left a puddle of water behind? So I need to ask very specific questions to see if there is that third-party involvement.
And sometimes, and I know you're very thorough, Rob, at asking those questions to try to get at that third-party issue, but sometimes it's not obvious. I'm going to give an example that's a little bit gruesome, but it's illustrative of how these things can be hidden sometimes. And so I represented the widow of a man who was operating a forklift that, I don't know if you've ever seen these, the forklifts that ride piggyback on those flatbed trucks, and they deliver things on site. So that was his job, and he was on site, and he had a load of pavers, and he noticed there was a hammer that had fallen down off the load of pavers down into the mechanics aspect of it, you know, or the machinery of it. And he reached forward to grab it to get it out of there. And because of the design of this forklift, there was a lever, there's a series of levers. The very one closest to him is the down forks operational point. And he, leaning forward, pushed into that, and he decapitated himself very sadly. And there was a very simple design feature that would have prevented that, that exists on other equipment, to have a little bar around the hand levers so nobody inadvertently bumps into them and causes this type of thing. And so some people might not have seen that. They would have seen, you know, this is a solo incident. He was, you know, operating the piece of equipment himself, but this is an example of how even the manufacturer of a piece of equipment that is defective can be that third party that allows a personal injury case, even in the context of a work injury.
That's a really good point, because that's the type of thing that's easy to miss, because I'm always asking about another person. So I had a similar sort of case, except mine was the employee worked for a grocery store, and he was operating the forklift, and a driver for a supplier ran into him and severely damaged both of his knees. So that was easy to spot. But if the forklift itself is defective, then there's no other person involved, but you might want to file a lawsuit against the manufacturer of the forklift for not making a safe forklift.
And I don't know if this is getting too granular, but sometimes it's the manufacturer, given the examples we just are talking about. Sometimes an employer will have another company, a third party, do the maintenance.
Maintenance. I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah. Who maintains the stuff?
Yeah. So there's a lot of different places where fault can lie if somebody improperly maintains a piece of equipment.
And if I get confused about that, that's when I say, call Chris.
Yeah.
Because he'll have the nuances. I think there's something going on here, and I may not be quite sure what it is. So I'm going to have you go talk to the professional in the same way that, like, you know, maybe you should be on Social Security. I want you to go talk to the Social Security specialist, or maybe they discriminated against you. I want you to go talk to the employment law specialist. So I kind of see myself as a gatekeeper to look for these issues and get people out to the right specialists who understand their area of law more than I do.
Is there an advantage to having multiple attorneys when you have these multiple claims?
The way I view it, I mean, I do both, and I like to handle both, unless I'm working with somebody as experienced and as easy to work with as Rob. So as long as the personal injury attorney and the workers' comp attorney, if they're different people or different firms, can work together well, then I don't see an issue. But if they're not coordinating things, and they don't have a good working relationship, it can be a problem. Because the example I often give my clients is these two cases are like two buses traveling down the road together. And if they're not staying, you know, in their lanes, and they're not communicating together, those buses can collide with each other or something else and just really cause problems.
And I want to talk about that, the two attorneys, but I think Jeff is telling us we may need to take a quick break.
We have a few seconds if you want to do it. If it's a minute-long story, probably not.
It's going to be a long story.
Long stories are a good thing, but maybe when we get back. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
And you are listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. I'm Jeff Hayden, joined in the studio by tonight's co-host, San Rafael attorney Rob Wyman, and we're discussing workers' compensation law and personal injury law with Christopher Viadro, the managing partner and founder of Viadro Law. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topics. You want to talk about workers' compensation or personal injury. You're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation, where Rob was about to give us a long story.
Yeah, it's not too terribly long, but I represented someone who had a third-party attorney that did not know workers' compensation, did not talk to me very much, and my client had hired this attorney before they hired me, and he messed up the workers' compensation claim, and he didn't really explain. This is a topic that we're probably going to get to at the end about, Chris, you mentioned that there's no double recovery. And these are terribly important issues that arise around settlement time for either claim. And this attorney didn't really explain how settlement of the third-party case is going to impact the workers' compensation claim. And my client was devastated to learn that the settlement, for all practical purposes, ended their workers' compensation claim. And they were getting ready to have surgery. And the workers' compensation carrier said, sorry, we're done. Client was not happy. So there are personal injury attorneys out there like Chris who know both systems, or there are personal injury attorneys who will work with the workers' compensation carrier. So I had a case referred to me by a third-party attorney who said, Rob, I've got a good offer on the table. I think I want to settle this, but should I hold off for a bit? And I said, that would be a great idea. If you can stall them for a few months, the client's about to get a knee replacement, and let's get that knee replacement done first and then try and settle both cases. It's very important to either have one workers' comp attorney and a personal injury attorney, or a personal injury attorney that understands and does workers' compensation law to avoid some of those pitfalls.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head that what that attorney did in reaching out to you and asking the right question was the right service to the client, and sadly, that doesn't always happen, that kind of coordination.
And it's such a complicated case that the PI attorney, myself, the attorney for the workers' compensation carrier, the claims adjuster for the workers' compensation carrier, I've got a great workers' compensation insurance company I'm working with. This poor man was injured really severely when he fell down an elevator shaft on a construction site, and we're going to sit down and have a little meeting and figure out the best way forward for this gentleman. And the workers' comp care is being very cooperative, and the third-party people are being cooperative. And we're hoping that we can work out something where he'll be able to get his surgery, and then we'll look at the settlements down the road. So I'm lucky that I'm working with a lot of talented people on this claim, and they're all looking out for this guy's best interest. I mean, the insurance company's trying to save money, of course, but at the same time, they know they have a responsibility. This is a very, very serious injury, and they're working with us to try and get the right benefits to this gentleman.
I did get a workers' compensation question texted to me.
Okay.
Asking, can't I just use my own doctor? Can't the doctor who just did the evaluation for my personal injury case be the same doctor that treats me in the workers' comp case?
Generally, no. The workers' compensation system requires that an employee at least try to get treatment through the workers' compensation system. So someone gets injured, generally most insurance companies will have something called a medical provider network. And they have a network of doctors and all sorts of different specialties. And the injured worker, if they want their treatment paid for by the workers' compensation carrier, is required to at least try to get a doctor within their network. Now, sometimes that's not possible. I just ran across that today. I've got a client who lives out in the country, and there simply are no doctors in their network, so they're letting him go to the doctor of his choice. But generally, you have to pick a doctor within the workers' compensation system. Now, where it starts getting complicated is if treatment is denied in workers' compensation, which happens a lot. A doctor wants to do a steroid injection into his shoulders, denied by workers' compensation. That worker has every right to then go to their own insurance company, Kaiser, Blue Cross, whatever, and get the treatment there. They'll have to pay the copay. And there's ways sometimes where we can even get around that. So, we work with the workers' comp carrier, and we work with our client to figure out how to get this treatment. But generally, you have to go through the workers' comp first. The law does allow people to pre-designate a doctor, so they can designate before they're injured a doctor that they want to be their workers' compensation doctor. But there's a lot of rules involved in that, too.
That doctor has to agree, right?
Doctor has to agree. It has to be a doctor they've seen before. They have to have an already established relationship. So they can't get injured and so they say, well, I pre-designated Dr. Jones, someone I've never seen before in my life because someone told me to pre-designate him. That doesn't work. It has to be a doctor that you've already had a relationship with, that has already seen you, like your family doctor. And then you can. So the rules are a little complicated. Most employers, the HR department has all the forms to fill out. They'll tell you how to pre-designate a doctor. Few people do it, unfortunately. So another good reason to go to a workers' compensation attorney is that we can help. We can look at that network. We know who the good doctors are. We can help get someone to a good provider who's going to look out for the injured worker's interests.
I think you fully answered what the person texting was asking. It did make me think of an issue that, and maybe that also was what was being asked, but in terms of the treating doctor also being applicable in the personal injury case, and I just wanted to briefly comment on that. So assume you're treating with a doctor through the workers' compensation system, that doctor may ultimately be a witness in a civil case and in the personal injury case if it goes to trial. One of the things that's important there is because that doctor is going to be a witness, you want to make sure that you're communicating all of your complaints accurately, fully, et cetera, to the doctor. Because sometimes people go to the doctor and their main focus is their shoulder, but they also got something going on with their left knee. But the shoulder really hurts more, and so they keep just talking about that. And so the knee doesn't end up in the doctor's reporting very well. And so I just encourage people to be thorough with their doctors, tell them about all the complaints.
Let me turn it over to Rich from Richmond. Welcome to your legal rights.
Thanks. I have a question. I don't even know if this is the right people to talk to, but I was working in the gym, and I picked up a heavy dumbbell to re-rack it, and one of the ends, the stoppers on the plates, fell off the end and landed on my foot, and I think I fractured one of the bones in my foot. I'm waiting to hear back from the x-ray results. But do I have a case against the employer? Because, that's no good. They should make sure their stuff is in good repair so that doesn't happen when I'm just doing my job here.
And let me ask you a further question just to clarify. Are you saying that the equipment had been not maintained and broken down, or are you saying that there may be a design issue that it wouldn't hold the plate in place?
I don't know. I just know that I picked up a set of heavy dumbbells that some person left because people don't clean up after themselves. And I was going to put them back on the dumbbell rack, and one of them, the end came off, and two of the plates fell and whacked my foot pretty good. I don't know if it was a design. These are not brand new. You know, they've been around for a few years. But I don't know what the requirements are for maintaining the dumbbells to making sure that they're not, nothing like this is going to happen. What's a reasonable expectation? But it sure hurts my foot, I'll tell you that.
Well,
not much I do know.
This is Rob. I'm the workers' comp guy. I'm going to start first. Boy, this would be a great question for a bar exam because this has got all sorts of interesting things. So if you work for the gym, let's just start with that. You have a workers' compensation claim. You were hurt at work. The workers' compensation carrier should be notified. You should be getting treatment through workers' compensation. If you're unable to work, you should be getting other benefits like the temporary disability check that we talked about. But I'm going to sort of turn this over to Chris. I'm going to throw some thoughts over to him and see what he says, because I can see a lot of things going on here. For example, maybe there's a lawsuit against the person who is using the equipment if they sort of broke the rules and did something wrong. So maybe that customer of the gym is possibly a third party.
That's a hard one, though, because everybody does that.
Yeah,
that one feels like a hard one for me as well. You know, people leave stuff around, but that doesn't necessarily translate to a likelihood of something of them falling out. Let me, not to get again too specific here, but is one of the clamps that you used, is it one of the sort of spring ones, or it's not really pertinent?
No, they're built in.
Okay.
So you buy, let's say you're designing a gym and you're putting together all the equipment. They have like dumbbells up against the wall, and there'll be 10 pounds, 20 pounds, 30 pounds, 40 pounds, 50 pounds. And on those, you know, there's a handle in the middle, and then there's two plates or two ends that have plates on them on either side. And then it's usually like a welded piece or, you know, a permanent fixture that keeps everything in place. And that's what broke off.
Okay. Well, so as Rob was saying, that does raise some a multitude of questions. So if it is something that fractured, the original design that fractured, you could go one of two directions on this. It could be that it was made defectively. It could be that it was designed defectively. But sometimes products that fail are not on the manufacturer, meaning it's not their fault. It can be they were subsequently damaged while in the possession of the user. So this thing getting banged?
People drop their weights from, like, you know, waist high sometimes.
Exactly.
And the floors are padded, but, you know, you do that enough times over the years, they're not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah.
It says don't drop your weights, but people do it because they like making the noise and feeling like a big shot.
You know, I hear that. And so if that is, you know, if that were what caused it, the repeated dropping of it, then, you know, it's not likely to be on the manufacturer. Now, this again comes into this concept of the lack of significance of fault, if you will, on the part of either the injured person, the injured worker yourself, or the employer. It may be that, you know, when you buy these, there's some manual with it or some instruction sheet that says check these collars every 6 months or something like that. And if
they don't have that, I'm sure. But this is like, I wish it was like 24 Hour Fitness or somebody with deep pockets like Crunch. But sadly, this is just Gordon's Gym in El Sobrante. It's like a, you know, a mom and pop place. They don't have the deep pockets. I feel bad. Unless they got insurance, like.
But again, remember the workers' comp is the only remedy that you would have against your employer.
And even the smallest employer, that's why they buy workers' compensation. That's why they're required to buy workers' compensation insurance, so that if one of their employees get injured, it's not going to bankrupt them. The workers' compensation carrier is going to pay for the claim.
Yeah, that's why they get it. I mean, they're required to get it. Sorry, didn't mean to. Go ahead. What were you saying?
No. Go ahead. I interrupted you. Sorry.
They're required to get workers' compensation insurance, and so, and that's what it's there for. So
it protects the employer.
Yeah,
I pay my premium every month, and if one of my workers gets injured, I know that they're going to get taken care of by my workers' compensation carrier.
And your business is not going to close as a result.
Exactly.
Unless that was the one person who knew how to do something that's necessary to your business, but that's a whole different story.
But it's not going to bankrupt the employer to have to pay medical bills and all this other stuff. That's what the workers' compensation policy is for, and it's there to protect you, and it's there to protect the employer.
Okay, good. I feel better about that. Okay, thank you, guys.
Well, I hope you feel physically better as well over time. Good luck to you.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Rich.
So we sort of got ahead of ourselves a little bit about wrapping up the claim, but the hour is rushing by, and and really at the end of the claim is where I see a lot of problems sometimes when there isn't communication between the workers' compensation attorney and the personal injury attorney. And, you know, in our system, for example, we can just settle claims for a lump sum of cash. Cases goes away. They write a check. Case is over. We also resolve claims where someone will be paid permanent disability payments, but then can hang on to their right to ongoing medical care. But then they go and settle their third-party claim, and that can interrupt the workers' comp benefits. Chris, how does that work?
It can, and how does it work is a very complicated issue.
It's very complicated.
I regularly lecture to both workers' comp attorneys and personal injury attorneys on this topic. The you know, what happens when you're settling and the interplay between the two systems, and there's no clean answer. And I think it's going to be a little bit beyond, you know, our time and scope here to go into it in real detail. But the short version is that the general rule is that if you settle or a personal injury case, or you have a trial and get a recovery in a personal injury case, that the amount of money you get in that case will serve as a credit in the comp case. What do I mean by credit? What it means is that it can cut off your benefits in the comp case to the same tune, the same amount that you're getting in the personal injury case. There are really a lot of exceptions to this, and I'm struggling here because it does get complicated, but in this narrow instance, even though we said something different before, the employer's fault, if any, in causing the injury can be a factor in determining whether or not those benefits get cut off.
Let's say you've got a smaller personal injury case. And by the way, when we talk about credit, it's the net amount of money that your client receives after the fees and everything else is taken out. So the case resolves and they get their check for $20,000, let's say. Now, I'm handling the workers' compensation claim, and what's going to happen is the next sort of $20,000 worth of benefits are not going to be available to that injured worker. Now, maybe the workers' compensation carrier, I'm grossly simplifying this, but maybe the workers' compensation carrier owes them $50,000. So they're going to get credit for the first 20, and then they're going to have to pay the next 30. That's a very simplified way of looking at it. But there are ways that attorneys like Chris and I can work together with the workers' compensation carrier, with the third-party insurance carrier to minimize those credits, to minimize those offsets as part of an overall deal.
Yeah, to make it a win-win and make sure that the compensation is just and fair and something isn't inappropriately cut off in the form of benefits. And I think that was a lot of that may have been a little bit complex, but the short answer again, which I think we keep reiterating, is that communication between the attorneys handling the respective claims is a way to avoid unnecessary disruptions and things of that nature.
Are the settlements for workers' comp taxable?
No, nothing in workers' compensation is taxable. It's all tax-free.
How about in personal injury?
I dodge that question ever so slightly because I'm not a tax lawyer. I will say that there is an IRS exemption which excludes taxation on personal injury recoveries. I also advise my clients to discuss the matter with their own CPA or tax preparer. That's how I'll answer that.
You talked about a credit coming back to workers' comp, and I presume that that's just reimbursing what the carrier paid out in workers' comp. But isn't it is it pretty similar? You get in a car accident but make a claim on your medical insurance, later you get paid and you might have to pay it back?
So we were talking about a slightly different issue. The credit was in the workers' comp arena, right before the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board. What you're talking about is reimbursement, which would happen actually in the civil case. And so in the civil case, the personal injury case, as we've been calling it, the comp carrier can ask for some reimbursement of what they have paid. And there are ways to deal with how much they might get, if anything, but they are entitled to ask for that, just like you were saying with your own private health insurance that might have a lien as well.
Look, that used to be my job. When I first started off, I did what's known as subrogation work. I would go out and try and get some of our money back because we would argue that we, the workers' compensation carrier, were injured too. We had to pay benefits to this person because that third party caused an injury. So we would go in there and try and get our money back. And usually it was a negotiated deal. We would get something back. But they have every right to also sue that third party.
That's
so the
right.
Workers' the plaintiff can bring a lawsuit. So can the workers' compensation insurance company.
And they generally can get something back unless, and again, this is going to get a little convoluted, but unless the employer was partially at fault for the injury, and while the injured worker can't sue the employer's fault is a factor in determining whether or not its workers' comp carrier can get any reimbursement. Because the law, and these aren't my words, this is in the case law for the state of California, if the comp carrier, or the employer rather, has the blood of the injured worker on its hands, they're not entitled to reimbursement generally.
Now here's another question.
Yeah.
If the employer is partially responsible for the injury, say, just to keep the numbers even, say they're half responsible for the injury, does that reduce the culpability of the third party in the PI suit?
It does. And so that brings up another interesting question. So sometimes you can have a situation where multiple parties are at fault. Let's, again, keep it simple with a car accident. Let's say you're a passenger in a car being driven by your coworker, and your coworker is speeding through an intersection, and then a third party, some other person, runs a stop sign through the intersection. And let's say the speeding coworker is a factor in the incident. Well, those are two different entities that are at fault for the same accident. And there can be multiple parties. I have another case right now that I'm working on where it's on a construction site, and there are three different parties that had a hand in my client's injury. So, yes.
This gets so complicated that I've heard you give lectures for this on just this topic alone.
Yeah.
The employer fault and the recovery. It'll be a two-hour lecture, so we don't really have time to go into all that this evening. But it's another reason why consulting with both a workers' comp attorney and a personal injury attorney is so important. I've been called in sometimes to Superior Court when a case can't settle. The judge will say, I want everyone in here. Bring in everybody. And so the workers' compensation attorney representing the insurance company will come in. I'll come in. The personal injury attorney will come in. The various defendants, and we'll sit down and hash all this stuff out. And it does get very, very complicated. And it's just not something we have time to. And we could devote hours to just that one question. But again, it's why it's so important to make sure that you're dealing with attorneys that understand the interplay between workers' compensation and personal injury so they can get the best result for the injured person.
And ultimately, you walk in shrouded with support and people that are advocating for you because you know the other side's going to do that. They don't want to spend any money.
Well, I mean, I love coming into the personal injury cases because quite often the defense attorneys in the PI cases, they know nothing about workers' comp. The Superior Court judges don't know anything about workers' compensation. And so I can come in and just start spewing all sorts of mumbo jumbo. And 9 out of 10 times, they won't admit that they have no idea what I'm talking about. So what they'll do is they'll just throw some more money on the table and we can get the case resolved.
There you go.
I always enjoy doing that. That's fun.
It's mumbo jumbo to them, but you are, you know, you have a great understanding of the law, and if they can't understand it, they can't understand it.
And they won't admit they can't understand it, which is why the judge pressures them to put some more money on the table.
Yeah.
And then everyone's happy.
Always an advantage to be the one in the room who knows the law that everybody at some level looks to.
Yeah.
Well, we're just about out of time, and I wanted to reserve each of you about a minute for any closing thoughts. Want to go first?
Sure. I first wanted to say thanks again for having me here. I really enjoyed chatting with you both. And I think the parting comment that I would leave with our listeners is this. If you find yourself in a circumstance where you have a workers' compensation case or a personal injury case, there is no downside to contacting a lawyer just for some advice. You're not going to get charged. Lawyers that do personal injury and workers' compensation get paid if there is a recovery. And so there is no downside to reaching out, finding out what your rights are, finding out what your options are, and getting pointed in the right direction. And then you can figure out if it's the right person, the right match for you, because that's important. As well, you can call around and talk to several lawyers.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Sorry.
We're on the same. This is why we work well together.
We're
on the same page. A good workers' compensation attorney will spend about an hour with a new client, and there's no charge for it. And if we think that there's a third party angle there, we will say here's the names of a couple good attorneys. Go talk to them as well, and we'll see whether it's worth your while to pursue one, both, one or the other, and because there's no charge, there's absolutely no reason not to give. And again, I always think it's a good idea to check, see if they're certified specialists, and if so, you know they're going to be an attorney that has experience.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight we've been talking about workers' compensation and personal injury, and occasionally the twain shall meet. Our guest tonight has been Christopher Viadro from Viadro Law. Tonight's show was produced by Rob Wyman and yours truly. Please tune in next Wednesday, like every Wednesday at 6 o'clock, where, as always, we will take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's co-host, Rob Wyman, and to tonight's guest, Christopher Viadro. And on behalf of Your Legal Rights, a big thanks to those of you that are listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.